Big Planet Comics episode 62.
Yep.
On the internet.
Yeah, indeed. All right. So on the internet. So this is Big Planet Comics podcast. This is episode 62. My name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And yeah.
Woo. We're here to review some stuff.
Oh, is that what we're doing this time?
Nick, you super hyped up right now, bro. You sound like you're really... we're going to reveal some
comics. Somebody had a birthday this week.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Woo. This is the best part.
Yeah, so happy birthday, Nick.
Thanks.
Yeah, how was that?
It was awesome.
That's good.
It was pretty fun.
What'd you do?
I went next door to Bonarotti, which I worked here for like 5 years. I've never been in there.
Because it's expensive. It's an Italian restaurant next to this place.
It's swank.
It's so good.
It's good?
Yeah.
That's good.
God, it's really good.
Yeah. What about you, Jared? What did you do for Nick's birthday?
I gave him half a day off and then made him work at another store for half a day.
I was like, wait a second.
Yeah. I did get it off an hour early, so sorry.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah.
Cool. Did you get any presents or anything?
Got an iPod Touch. That was pretty sweet.
Pretty fancy.
Got some shirts.
Oh, yeah?
Some shirts.
Shirts.
Some dress shirts.
Whoa.
Tie. I got a tie.
A tie?
From who?
Oh, my mom.
Uh-oh. She's telling you to dress up a little bit.
Well, I got to dress up for a baptism soon.
Yeah, Nick's joining a cult.
She's like, reminder, you got to go to this baptism. Happy birthday.
I got to perform the baptisms.
So. Wait, what? How does that work?
My cousin's
nephew. You just dip a baby in the water?
Basically. So,
I can see how this will go badly.
I don't know if I actually do the dunking part. But
I hope not.
Enfant à jus.
I think that often it's like you're the one holding the baby.
Yeah. It's pretty intense during the Greek ones because they like have like a giant, like big, like bucket and they just like dump them in.
Whoa,
like a
really?
Bunch of times. Yeah.
Do you have to like walk into it with them and stuff?
Yeah. I have to stand up there and hold the baby right next to the bucket. I don't know if I have to do any actual dunking.
Do you have to wear like a poncho, like a Gallagher show?
No.
I like how little you know about your responsibilities for this dangerous task.
I know most of it and I'll get walked through.
That's good.
It'll be awesome. I'm excited about it.
Cool. Sounds like a baptism.
He's a cute baby. That's a good thing. I was a little worried, you know. What if this baby's not cute?
You refuse to do it for now.
No,
babies.
But he's super cute.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I really did anything this week. I've been playing video games, and I've been reading this Untold History of Marvel book.
Oh, Marvel Comics. That just came out.
Yeah.
How is that?
It's really interesting. I want to talk more about it when I finish it up. But like right now, I'm kind of in the early stages of like Fantastic Four 1 and Spider-Man and stuff just came out, but I was flipping through and there's like stuff about like Heroes Reborn and the jump over to Image and like the Clone Saga and stuff. So I'm excited about that.
That's awesome.
So is it like the creative side or just like behind the scenes business stuff or both?
It seems like both. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's
so, there's definitely been some funny anecdotes in it already. Like about, like Steve Ditko only ever went to one convention.
Wow.
And
good for him.
And he was just
that was
like
enough.
He was there was like a guy that met him there and said he was just like the most miserable person he had ever met. Wow. It was like, don't get into comics, kid. It's a thankless profession.
Wow.
And it's true.
Yeah, it is true.
Yeah. So kids, don't get into comics. Listen to Steve Ditko. But anyway, I forgot to say you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you can check us out on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can Twitter us at Big Planet Comics.
Yep.
You can go on our Tumblr, not updated enough Tumblr, but still
we're, awesome.
Still we're tumbling. Yeah. And what else? We got upcoming signings and events.
We do.
Yeah, that's October 27th, District Comics at U Street.
That should be interesting.
At least 10 creators into our smallest store ever. It's going to be amazing.
And no customers allowed.
Yeah, you can watch through the windows.
Yes. And then November 3rd, Ben Hatke of Legends of Zeta the Space Girl fame will be at our Vienna and College Park stores.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's it. Should we get right into some news?
Let's do it.
With the Newsmaster Nick, here we go.
All right, hot off the presses from NYCC, if you know what that means.
Nope, go ahead.
New York Comic Con.
Scott Snyder and Jim Lee are going to do a new monthly Superman title.
Lies. I call it a lie already.
Well, yeah.
Jim Lee has lied to my face in person telling me he could do a monthly Justice League series. That did not happen.
Well, he did it for
six
monthly?
Months.
Monthly?
Well, it came out every month for 6 months.
On time? Remember, like, issue 1 came out and issue 2 was like a week late?
Well, they did a smart thing where they... It was a book that came out at the first week of the month, and then it started coming out by the end of the last week of the month.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know how long he'll be doing it, but we'll see.
I think that's interesting. I think it's weird that it's a new Superman title as opposed to just putting them on Action Comics or Superman.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is weird.
Yeah, somebody weird is taking over Action Comics. I don't know. Anyway,
I'm sure it's going to be just called like Man of Steel or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, or Metropolis Central.
It's mostly. I mean, they want to have three Superman books when the movie's out. So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Another interesting thing. Former Lost showrunner Carlton Cuse is developing a Six Gun TV show.
Really?
NBC. Oh, wow.
That is awesome.
It's pretty interesting. If you guys don't know what Six Gun is, it's like a supernatural Western comic. It's pretty awesome.
One of our favorites. It's
about
really good.
A haunted revolver.
Six of them.
Yeah. Six of them, yeah.
six guns.
Yeah. And then a few more Marvel Now books announced. Some of them are really exciting. Some of them are, you know, whatever.
Well done.
Well,
what have you got?
There's a new Spider-Man title, Superior Spider-Man, written by Dan Slott, which, you know, he's been writing it for a long time, so it's not too much of a change.
But I guess he's not. Have they announced who's taking over, like, just regular Spider-Man when it relaunches at number one?
I think that's what the new Spider-Man series is.
Superior Spider-Man?
Yeah, it's really weird. He's got, like, new powers, maybe?
Extra arms, I hope.
And you know what? Said it might not be Peter Parker.
I will say, every time Spider-Man gets new powers, it's great.
It's true.
Always the best storyline.
I actually had a weird theory about this that I came up with some dude that I was talking to at the store. I think that maybe, because Dr. Octopus is supposedly dying, I think his last evil thing is that he switches minds with Peter Parker.
Wait, what?
Wow.
So, do you have a reason to think that?
So, like, Dr. Octopus, because part of the thing they were saying, and this is like, is Spider-Man a good guy or a bad guy? It's really weird. Yeah.
Huh. So, is he a menace? Is he a masked menace?
The title of the first storyline is Hero or Menace.
Of course.
Yeah.
Written by J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, right. Another one is Savage Wolverine by Frank Cho, written and drawn by him.
Well, we already knew that was going to happen, right? There was going to be a Frank Cho Wolverine series.
Wow. It was rumored, yeah. Wow. And it's all in the Savage Land, and he said it's going to have a lot more humor in it than you would think.
That's what Frank Cho does.
If it's in the Savage Land, it's going to have a lot more loincloths in it.
It's going to have lots of Shaun of the She-Devil.
Lots of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
and
like his custom book.
The best of these that I've heard so far is Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey are doing Young Avengers.
Which is awesome.
It's got like some of the original Young Avengers on it. It's got Miss America from that Vengeance miniseries, who's an awesome character.
Who looks like maybe she's the main character, at least according to the awesome Brian Lee O'Malley variant cover that went up online today.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's her and Loki. Loki's like, you know, because Loki brought together the original Avengers and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And also Marvel Boy back in his original kind of costume as Marvel Boy.
So. Yeah, not the dumbified
Protector.
Brian Michael Bendis version of Marvel Boy, but looks like more like the Grant Morrison version of Marvel Boy, which is awesome. Cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's about it.
Cool.
Yeah, some interesting stuff happened.
That's some news.
Yeah, that's some news, you guys. how about that news?
How about it?
All right, so that's it for the news.
Yeah.
Let's do some viewer mail. Boom, viewer mail time. So just a couple questions this week. One is a really serious question. It says, hey guys, serious question.
Hey.
Oh, okay.
What's your favorite place to get pizza around Vienna? Thanks, Phil.
Probably Church Street Pizza. It's does New York style pizza by the slice, which
cool.
is a rarity in the Northern Virginia area.
I like there's a place called Extreme Pizza, so try that place out, Phil. And then we got another question. Well, I mean, we're not going to talk about local pizza for too long, right?
Does Nick have a different answer? That's what I want.
Oh, Nick.
I would say Anthony's Pizza, but that's in Falls Church.
So. Well, whatever.
Nice.
Sure.
It's awesome.
Antonio's Pizza.
Antonio's. No, it's Anthony's Greek.
So our one listener in Oklahoma, hopefully when you come out here.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. He has a question?
No.
Oh, I thought he was coming here.
No, I'm saying if he wants pizza and he comes to
Vienna. Okay.
That's Vienna, Virginia, by the way, not Austria. So then we've got another question from the always inquisitive Aaron M.
Oh, by the way, he tweeted me. He is in the far state of Oregon.
Oh, really?
Distant. Yeah, I didn't know. I thought it was local.
Our farthest. Is Oregon farther away than England? I feel like it might be.
Than England?
Than England.
They're probably about the same distance.
Yeah, so...
competing for furthest listener.
So, from the great state of Oregon, Aaron M. says, guys, first off, I want to say I love the show. I will forever and for always.
Oh.
That's sweet.
Wow, we can drop our standards a lot now.
I feel like Aaron has replaced Jessica as our... I don't want to call him a stalker.
Yeah, he's not outside my room.
He might be our biggest fan, though.
When he comes to visit.
Right now, I'm writing an article about being a comic snob and looking down on some types of comics over others. This got me wondering if you guys have any comics biases Is every genre treated with an open mind with you, or are there types of comics that you initially always cringe or groan over when you hear about them?
Steampunk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like generally...
Good girl slash bad girl comics, if that's a genre, and it kind of is. Terrible.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
Yeah, can you give me an example of a good girl slash bad girl comic?
That's two genres together, but like Lady Death.
Oh.
Or... Was it not Talon? Tarot.
Like Vampirella.
Tarot, Vampirella.
Yeah.
Just like.
Yeah.
Dawn, I don't know, for example.
I don't know what you call that. Like.
90s woman. Comics.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I think I might have mentioned this on here before, but when Previews, which is how we order all our comics every month, they did their like women in comics thing. And one of them was like Tarot, women in comics.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wait a second. Women in comics should be like, here's women that are creating comics, right, or whatever, or like strong female
or empowering
models.
Characters, not
not people who have comics. Tarot was the one where there was the storyline about the haunted vagina, right?
I believe you are correct.
Yeah, it's very
it's good stuff, you guys.
Somewhere between porn and comics.
I have sort of an aversion to furry comics. I do not like them.
Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. See,
Black Sad.
Something squeezed through the cracks.
No. Oh, don't say that.
Yeah, I know. It was grossing me out. Yeah, they're like Black Sad's really good. Yeah. Usagi. I mean, would Ninja Turtles be a furry comic?
Are there furry characters later on?
Well, you know what? The new Ninja Turtles comic is more furry-ish than the old
Ninja
Turtles.
There's like a fox or something.
Yeah, and it grosses me out.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Anything steampunk.
Yeah.
Really?
But then, like, isn't Gotham by Gaslight kind of steampunk? Like,
yeah,
I like that.
I guess.
I liked.
But initially, like, whenever I see something and it's, like, steampunk, my initial reaction is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, that's, oh, that God. Was his thing. Is like, what is our instinctive biases?
True.
When people dress up like steampunks.
Because we're open minded. We find the good among the dross, but it takes a while with these genres.
Also, anything written by Neil Gaiman.
Wow. Well, that's not true, though. Some stuff is good. But no, that initial reaction.
That, like, weird gothy thing.
Yeah.
Always, yeah. Yeah. But if any of our listeners wear velvet waistcoats, we still love you guys.
We do.
It's true.
But I think generally, like, none of the big genres really turn us off. Like, like we like crime, superhero, you know, just autobiographies and stuff like that. I like all that stuff.
We love good comics.
Yeah, we like good comics.
Very few.
So cordially yours and nerdiest, Aaron M. The M is for terrific, he says.
Aww.
Yeah, so that's it for questions this week.
That's it. Chirp.
If you guys have any questions, you can send those to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com or tweet us or send them to Facebook or
call us.
You can call the empty Grand Canyon that is the podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAST. You guys should call. There's a good echo on that hotline these days.
Someone actually asked us to talk to us about that.
Some guy's like, does anybody ever call that thing?
You're like, well, did you tell him to call the thing?
Yeah. He's like, some guy on your show was always complaining about it. We're like, yeah, that would be Kevin, and you should call. He's like, no.
He's like, no, I just want somebody to call so that he won't be sad anymore.
Yep.
It's okay, you guys. You don't
I almost called it this week just to see if it worked.
It works.
Are you sure?
I check every day. All right. So, but always we like to hear your voices, the dulcet tones of your voices.
And it's a good way to guarantee to be on the show, unless your question's terrible.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, there's no guarantees. We pretty much read every question, though. We don't have, like, piles of questions we're not reading over here.
That's true.
Sometimes, every once in a while, there's, like, we get, like, a who would win in a fight question, and we're just like,
yeah.
But you know what? Send us
your who would win. We answer those often most of the time, too.
We do, too. Yeah, right. All right, so let's do some reviews. You guys ready?
Yep.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
You know what that song means?
What?
Scott Lobdell.
It's time for reviews. It does mean Scott Lobdell. That's the message of the song, is Scott Lobdell. All right, but so up first this week, we've got Batman number 13, following hot on the footsteps, in the footsteps.
On the heels?
On the heels. There we go. I feel like we're a little off kilter this evening.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
We're awesome.
We're so awesome, you guys. So this is by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, the regular Batman team. But the big thing that this is kind of the first part of this Return of the Joker, Death of the Family storyline.
The epic story, as they bill it. This is so good. If you guys have been reading Batman by Scott Snyder, it's... you should not be reading comics. I don't know. It's really good. This is follows up a little bit on the stuff in Court of Owls and some of the first issue of Detective Comics where we saw Joker's face get cut off.
Yeah.
And it's weird. I don't know how much of this was planned, but they kind of, at the beginning, they do this weird retroactive thing where they're like, yeah, Joker didn't get his face cut off. He let him cut his face off because he is part of his plan. And I was like, eh. But I was like, this is not really what was intended. But anyway.
I like that Nick is trying to suss out Joker's mentality. He's like, the Joker wouldn't do that. That's illogical.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, right. Yeah. But this is really creepy. This is probably one of the creepiest Jokers we've ever seen. He's actually kind of scary. You don't really see him a lot in the comic until like the end. And when you see him, it's like really terrifying. And his plan seems pretty good. And it's really well. There's a bunch of reveals that are really well planned out. Like I didn't see a lot of the stuff coming, especially the very end of it. Yeah, and it seems like it's going to be a pretty crazy story. Joker's definitely...
It is dark.
Like, he's always been crazy, but he's really, really crazy now.
Yeah, I would compare this to, like, maybe, like, Killing Joke, where Joker is just, like, you know, he's just, like, he's mentally torturing people, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, he's also physically torturing people.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, the way this issue is structured is very much like a horror story, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, there's... it's really well set up as a single issue. I know this is a big storyline, but... I feel like as a single issue, it pays off really well because there's stuff that's set up in the beginning. Like basically, it starts off with Commissioner Gordon talking to another cop on the roof.
Is it
Harvey Bullock?
Yeah.
About you know, so sort of all these weird portents that have been happening. These sort of ominous events that have been happening around Gotham. Yeah. Like a lion was born with
things.
Two heads.
Oh, yeah.
And like the Gotham River started flowing in the wrong direction. And it really sets up this great, like, sort of creepy tone from the beginning. And he also talks about this thing where he's been like, you know, he was like hiding his cigarettes and like trying to quit. And that kind of comes back in the end of the story in an interesting
in a great
way as well.
Yeah.
And so that sets up this kind of really horror movie feel. And then the rest of the story, like when the Joker comes up, you know, the lights go out and nobody can see him and everybody's like screaming and stuff.
Totally panicked.
I feel like this story really plays to Scott Snyder's kind of abilities as a writer because he's, you know, he's done a lot of horror stuff. Like he did like Severed and he's doing American Vampire.
Yeah.
And so this is like right in his wheelhouse. But God, that Joker creeped me out, man.
Yeah, it's like all the Night of the Owls stuff was really great for kind of setting up Gotham City and like kind of this new... you know, like the new normal for Gotham City or whatever. Yeah. But this is very much more like a personal story. Like this is Batman and the Joker, you know, it's like, it's classic, but he does it in a new way. And I thought it was interesting. It does some of the stuff leans a little more to like a weird, like, I don't even know, like a kind of Saw
exploitative. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of turned me off a little bit. Like even going back to Killing Joke, I think you're right. That's the closest example. Like Joker does terrible things in Killing Joke, but this put me off more than Killing Joke did.
It's a very different Joker. He's more physical. He's like,
that might be it. Yeah.
He's like a Jason Voorhees or something. He's like killing people like himself like in a
really
terrible ways and not just like having elaborate like pranks going on.
Yeah.
And then there's also a backup story in this that was I thought really well written and kind of there's a twist at the end of the main issue and then the backup story is kind of happened before that twist from a different angle.
So good.
And it's really well done. And
it's got great art, too.
It's got great art, which I think is Greg Capullo working with somebody else, like Jonathan Glapien.
I think it's Jock, isn't it?
That's Jock doing the whole thing.
Never mind. Yeah. It's Jock then. I don't know. That has that kind of tone as well, but it's more
mental.
Yeah, it's more mental. Oh, yeah,
such a good, like... emotional feeling to it. It was terrifying. Ah, so good.
Yeah, I really like it. So this is a really good issue of Batman. I'm excited about the rest of the stuff going on in this Joker crossover. Some of it's not going to be the best.
Yeah, there's a Batgirl prologue that came out this week as well, and I'm very curious for the rest of this event, like how much of it's actually... Someone was asking us this today, like how important the rest of it will be, or can you just read Batman? So we'll see.
Well, it's weird because the only other book coming out this month in October is another prelude to Death of the Family. So the next actual, I think... like legitimate issue of this is going to be the next issue of Batman and then things will start coming out. So I don't know how this is going to relate to like Suicide Squad.
That's what I'm sure.
Like
Harley
Quinn's in it. But
I'm not reading the Red Hood tie-ins.
Yeah. that's understandable, but the main Batman series should be really good. Yeah. And now that Jonathan Lehman's on Detective, I think his stuff on there will be really good too, because he's also, he'll approach it from a different sort of more
true
goofy angle. Hopefully.
Basically, if you want to read this story, just read Batman. And then if there are series that you already like, just keep reading those, you know?
But see, that's the thing, you don't know that. Like, we don't know how tight of a crossover this is going to be yet.
I feel like most of it will be in Batman.
We'll yeah, see. and then we'll see Batman and Robin as well. I would imagine yeah. and Detective. Yeah. Those are the three really good Batman books anyway. So just read those. Yeah. All right. So up next we've got a book that's a little bit different than the last book we talked about. This is Bigfoot Boy, Volume 1, Into the Woods. I did not write down who wrote this, but I'm pretty sure this is by Jay Torres and yeah. Faith Erin Hicks.
Yep.
And Faith Erin Hicks, we've talked about her stuff on here before. She did Zombies Calling and Brain Camp and The War at Ellesmere. And then Jay Torres, Jared, is that the, who is Jay Torres?
He's drawn like a lot of kids books with Jay Bone or something. It's like the two like initial
that's
creators.
The problem. I always get them mixed up, right?
Yeah.
He's done a lot of stuff and I just
did Jay Torres do Leave It to Chance? That's not right.
No, that was Paul Smith. Little Misadventure, that Alison Dare, Little Misadventures.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Young Indiana Jones thing. And
should probably do more research.
We've done a lot of stuff.
We don't know what we're doing.
We're always like, it's some guy.
Yeah, but I thought that this was a fun book.
I agree. sorry, I'm totally distracted and tired. No, someone else.
No, really? All right.
Jared doesn't want to talk about it.
All right. So basically, Bigfoot Boy is about a kid that moves from the city into a sort of new country home.
Yeah.
And he meets up with this girl who kind of hates city folk because they destroy her woods and stuff like that. And he's just messing around and he finds this totem, basically, that turns him into
Sasquatch.
A Sasquatch, yeah. So he says Sasquatch and it turns him into a Sasquatch.
Yeah, it's very like Captain Marvel-ish.
Yeah, and then he says Sasquatch backwards and it changes him back into a boy. And kind of the whole story is just him kind of forming a friendship with this girl and then being chased down by the police and like getting into crazy situations. Like one of the powers he gets is he can talk to animals. So he also befriends this like flying squirrel.
Yeah.
And the whole thing's very light. Like there's not a lot that really happens in the story. No. I don't feel like,
I mean, the core of it is about this boy, you know, adapting to a new town and trying to make friends with this girl.
Yeah. And it's a kid's book, I'd say, for like, you know, like 8 to 10 year olds, something like that.
Yeah. Very young readers, but
and it's just really fun. Like it's really light and breezy, and it flows really well. In ways, it kind of reminded me of the Bird and Squirrel book. If you guys remember, we talked about that, where it's just fun. It feels like the kind of thing that would really make like a good cartoon.
Yeah, it's cute and actually like funny when it's supposed to be, and
good characters.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And Faith Erin Hicks is a great artist. She gets lots of comparisons to Brian Lee O'Malley, the Scott Pilgrim artist, which is totally understandable because she draws in a way that's very similar to Brian Lee O'Malley. But it really lends itself to kids' books. And, I don't know. This was really good. It's a weird book because there's not a whole lot to say about it. It's just, without saying it. Yeah.
There's a few things to it.
And it's just a fun book, basically.
So,
yeah, it's fun. It's cute. Good adventure. Good characters.
Good stuff. All right, up next we got a book that you wouldn't think that we would be talking about on this episode.
What? Why not?
Or on this podcast ever.
I know what it is.
Because this is MacGyver Fugitive Gauntlet 1 of 5.
Yeah. So MacGyver's back.
Yeah, MacGyver.
Mackie G.
MacGyver is back. So so this is written by Lee David Zlotoff, who that's the guy who created MacGyver.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which is already a good start. And then it's co-written by Tony Lee, who hasn't really done much. He writes Doctor Who comics sometimes.
There you go.
And but anyway. And then the pencils and inks on this are by Will Sliney, who has a very like Phil Noto kind of feel to his art.
Yeah, true.
And, it's very cool. But yeah, this is a MacGyver story.
So this one was kind of interesting because I don't know about you guys, but it's been a long time since I watched any MacGyver.
For those of you over the age of 30, you might remember MacGyver.
Like,
actually.
MacGyver's the prequel to MacGruber, is that right?
Yes. I thought they were, like, related.
I think they are, yeah.
But yeah, so this one sets it up as just young MacGyver gets called in by an ex-professor of his who wants him to help out with something. But the framework for this is that there is a group of assassins who have been hired to kill MacGyver, and they're, like, the best assassins in the world. And they've basically been offered a $7 million reward for killing him, but for every day it takes them to kill him, it drops by $1 million. So if you don't do it the first day, it's only $6 million, and so on. And he's called by this MacGyver is called by his professor to Africa to investigate or to help him out with a project. And as soon as he gets there is when everything goes crazy, and there's assassins and, you know, potential double agents and people in disguise. I mean, I barely remember any MacGyver episodes except I loved it as a kid, so I couldn't tell how much of this was out of tone for MacGyver. It felt pretty close, but it sounds like the stakes were a little high in some ways. I mean,
maybe the stakes always got really high in the MacGyver movies. If you saw,
there were movies.
Yeah,
they
were not in the movie theater.
No, there were TV movies.
Like Saturday night.
Okay,
movies.
Yeah.
There were like a lot of MacGyver movies, and those were always like James Bond level.
Really?
Yeah,
that
things.
Makes sense.
I mean,
get the big budget for two episodes.
This is definitely in that tone, and he makes like wacky things out of household objects.
Oh, that's true.
Makes a bomb out of jelly beans and stuff.
That part was awesome.
That, yeah. So, like, he definitely does a lot of MacGyvering in this.
He does.
Yeah. There are at least two incidents of MacGyvering.
Three.
Oh, are there three? Yeah. Okay, so two of them involve Bunsen burners.
Yep.
And
one of them involves, what is it?
Oh, like
leverage?
Like a dinner tray and some
Remember he escapes? Oh, yeah, it was the dentry.
Yeah, to get out of the cage or whatever.
Yeah.
But then there's one that's with jelly beans, which is...
That was my favorite.
Jelly beans that just came out of nowhere, to be honest.
Right, yeah.
He carries them, just in case.
But so there's kind of the story of these guys that want to assassinate MacGyver, and then there's also this scientist that he comes to meet is basically developed crops that are, like, super resilient to salt water.
Yeah, they're so just it's a good way to help produce extra food to help the population of the world. But it's like,
and then like kind of these big corporations, like basically it's like Archer Daniels Midland is trying to squash that and basically engineer the seeds so that you have to replant them every year, which is the thing that really happens.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that storyline is going on at the same time as MacGyver being murdered or trying to murder.
Spoiler, he's murdered.
No, spoiler, he's murdered in the first page.
That's a twist.
Yeah, it's a weird prequel. But yeah, and I don't know. It all kind of makes like a fun story. It feels very much like a TV show in a goofy kind of way.
Yeah.
It's so MacGyver.
But
That's
so MacGyver. But yeah, like when he does MacGyver stuff, it's great.
Yep. Yep.
And awesome. I never really watched MacGyver, but I've always been kind of aware of MacGyver. Yeah.
How can you not be? A lot of MacGyver.
Oh, did you?
I mean, I remember the TV movies.
That's true.
They were great.
And yeah, I don't know. This was just a fun comic. I mean, there's not like, you know.
My only problem with MacGyver. It is like, there's always a problem when you draw someone who's a real actor, like you're trying to replicate a real person's looks into a comic. It's
did a good interpretation of George Lucas in this.
Yeah.
There's that's a dude true. That looks exactly like George Lucas in this comic.
Yeah. Like, for one, he didn't have an awesome mullet, so I felt that was like a bad, like, I don't know, modernizing of the MacGyver look. But at the same time, it's like his look would change a little bit from like page to page, so sometimes like I felt like face on he got him really well, and other times he just like didn't, so I don't know.
Sorry, I was adjusting Nick's microphone. but he's also younger. Yeah, it's right.
Darth's
so
a little
it's,
inconsistent.
Inconsistent. Yeah. Yeah, but good. Yeah,
not... yeah, but it is. Yeah, it's. I don't know. There's something that I like about that. This is an artist I've never seen before, and I feel like he's competent, which is more than I can say for a lot of.
A straight up fun action comic, which there's not a lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it.
There's no like crazy twist.
It feels like comics usually tend to fall into these specific genres, and dudes that do MacGyver stuff is not one of those genres. So. Excited to see a comic where somebody did that. Yeah, so MacGyver. If you're a MacGyver fan, you probably already know about this. You've been reading about it on the MacGyver message boards.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you're not a MacGyver fan...
on the MacGyver mailing list.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, on the BBS.
BBS, yeah.
Maybe you could become a MacGyver fan by reading this book, because it was actually really good.
There you go.
All right, so... okay, so up next we've got our first... This is the first Marvel Now book we're going to talk about.
It's Marvel Right Now.
Marvel Right Now. It means everything. So... There were two Marvel Now books this week. There's this Red She-Hulk, and then there's Uncanny Avengers, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. I think everybody knows what Marvel Now is at this point, right?
Yeah, Marvel's new kind of relaunch of their line.
Rebrand, retitling.
For people that like things to be simple for them, it's exactly the same as the New 52.
Except
not at all, but that's what everybody thinks.
Except without all the changes.
Yeah, it's the same marketing plan as the New 52. Yeah. This is all still in the same universe.
Yeah.
Actually, all these comics coming out are really directly coming out of what happened at the end of Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah. Yep.
And Red She-Hulk is a weird comic.
It's really strange.
So I've been
reading Hulk.
Okay.
And this is kind of like, you know, the next issue of Hulk, and now it's Red She-Hulk. But
So this is by Jeff Parker and...
Carlos
Pagualan?
I forget.
Pagualan?
He drew a lot of... he drew a lot of World War... Not World War Hulk. Planet Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is Betty Ross, who I always want to call Betsy Ross.
Yeah. And that'd be amazing.
She's been the Red She-Hulk for, I'd say, a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of what happened with her is it ends up anybody who was there when Bruce Banner became Hulk, now has like potential to become a Hulk.
Yeah.
And so she is the Red She-Hulk, and this comic's weird.
Well,
indeed.
The weird thing is, it's for a Marvel Now book, it uses a lot of stuff from Hulk from before. Like, the main kind of villain in it is General Fordian or whatever. And he was like...
he was like the guy that was like running the task force that Hulk was a part of in like the stuff?
He was the one that was hunting down like Red Hulk. Because Red Hulk killed General Ross. You know, everybody thinks that General Ross is dead. And Red Hulk killed him. And they don't know that he is General Ross. And
so spoiler.
There's just kind of back and forth where like, you know, General Ross wants to tell him, but like he can't. And he's like trying to hunt him down.
It is confusing because his mustache disappears when he turns into a Hulk.
that would be amazing.
There's a great...
I didn't even think about that.
No, they did a reveal of that. It's only one issue of Hulk where it shows him transforming, and you slowly see the mustache recede.
What?
I wish he would have that, because
that would be totally Hulk amazing.
With a Tom Selleck mustache would be amazing.
The only reason he doesn't is because they didn't want to reveal that it was...
Yeah, or because they changed their mind at the last minute about who Red Hulk was.
I think they changed their mind several times. I think it was supposed to be General Ross, and then people found, like, predicted it right away, and so they'd made it not be General Ross, but then they were like, it's General Ross.
Lame.
But anyway.
Comics.
So in this comic, it keeps a lot of the cast from Hulk. Machine Man is in it. He was in it before, and Hulk's LMD girlfriend is in it. It's weird. I've been keeping up with Hulk, but I don't know exactly what's going on in this, but kind of not supposed to. The basic story is that Fordian is creating basically super soldiers to fight this recent, you know, rise of
the Hulks.
Well, you know, new power people all around. And She-Hulk, for some reason, really is against that and is trying to stop him.
I think that's what was weirdest about this is that...
I don't understand her motivations.
Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with Hulk. So for this, it was just like, I didn't know what she was doing there and why... Like, it seems also that she's doing things in a very, like, kind of obtuse way. Like, for someone who's supposedly, you know, a smart person who can turn into a Hulk, she's doing things, like, really stupidly. Like I'm going to attack this place, or I'm going to sneak in here and turn into the Hulk.
Well,
you know,
she's
it's just
a
like,
Hulk, so she doesn't care.
She does get more aggressive when she becomes the Hulk.
Yeah, her personality as Red She-Hulk is, like, she's, like, super, super aggressive and almost, like, evil.
I understand that the Hulk's going to do crazy smashing things, but, like, why?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, is this the best way to accomplish anything here?
She gets really crazy at the end of this. Yeah. That's the part that got me really interested in, like, so there's a really crazy thing that happens.
I did think the whole thing was just a little weird. Like, you don't, I mean, I like the idea of the government, like, creating super soldiers. It kind of makes sense within a superhero universe, I feel like. Right. But yeah, like, I just don't really get why She-Hulk cares.
Yeah.
Especially because she's just... She-Hulk, you know, it was weird. I thought Machine Man was awesome in this, though.
Machine Man has been awesome in this for a while, and he's great.
It's like, I like Jeff Parker's writing. I thought the dialogue was pretty well written and stuff. It's just I don't know, the whole story just didn't really grab me. It's definitely not. I don't think it was a good book to put out in like the first week of Marvel Now, and just because there's an implication that you can kind of just jump in and read this, and I feel like that is not what this book is.
I mean, no, I think you can. I think like I said, I haven't been reading Hulk, and I explained I think enough for me to follow. And there's huge chunks of like, these are two pages explaining who Red She-Hulk is and her background.
The sort of data file thing?
Yeah, but they do that twice in here?
Well, there's one about her and one about the Red Hulk.
Exactly.
The thing is that it has some of the characters from Hulk from before, but none of it has anything to do with anything that's happened in Hulk before. So it's definitely like a new jumping on point. Like, you can read this. Like, you might... Like, I think you're supposed to be kind of confused as to what's happening with Red She-Hulk.
Well, that's a risky start on a new book.
But anyway, it's not the best,
but it's fun.
But it's, it's kind of fun.
We'll see.
All right, so up next we have a book that's actually really, really great. This is Secret Prison number 7.
Yes.
This is put out by Retrofit, who we've talked about a bunch of their books before. They put out Fungus in 1999 and
Bowman.
Drag Bandits and Bowman, all kinds of good stuff. So this is Box Brown's sort of mini comics publishing house. Although it's
gone Maxi Comics.
Yeah, it's definitely become bigger than that with stuff like Raw Power. And then this Secret Prison is, you know, a book. This is a big, nice anthology.
Oversized anthology.
Yeah. So the whole thing with Secret Prison number 7 is it's kind of inspired by this old anthology magazine that came out in Japan called Garo. And Garo is like a very complicated idea. Like, it's also kind of comics, but... like basically the idea is you just have the freedom to do whatever you want. It's kind of what they say in the beginning of this.
And it's also, it was notable in Japan for the time because it kind of broke from the established genres of comics. It wasn't just like a robot comic or a, you know, a romance comic. It was like Kevin said, it was just the creators doing their often personal stories or just trying something completely bizarre. So it's kind of a mix of like personal and like cutting edge alternative.
There's a lot of horror in it.
Well, then the weird thing about that for me is like I also think of Gekiga as like also another word for the same thing. So I don't know how those two kind of intertwine or separate. But those things set aside, which you know, you can listen to Dan Adel talk about that all day long if you want to too. But basically, this is just a really well put together anthology with a lot of really great creators. So I'm not going to go through everybody in here because there are just a ton of people. But this has Box Brown in it, Josh Bayer, who did the Raw Power thing we were talking about before, Ryan Cecil Smith, who we talked about his comic in the SPX show, SF, which is a great comic.
Good.
Lamar Abrams, friend of the stores, friend of us, I don't know.
Friend to everybody.
Friend to all.
For his awesome remake comics.
Yeah, remake. Luke Pearson, who we obviously love on here, did the Hilda Folk comics. Just a ton of people. Katie Skelly, who her Nurse collection has not come out yet, but when that does, she will take the world by storm. Mario Domo, who we love his Pokemon comic that he put out.
So
just a ton of great stuff. So were there any like stories in here that kind of stood out to you guys?
Oh, man. I'd have to flip through it again because it was such a variety.
So
of
no.
Stuff.
No.
No. Like you said, it's a lot of new
there is
people.
A ton,
so.
Yeah. There's a ton of stuff in there.
Good.
I like the one in the middle where it's like... Oh God, hold on. I have to flip through it now.
Okay. So
tell us, Kevin.
I was a big fan of the Ryan Cecil Smith story, which was kind of a spy story about the spy who falls in love with this woman and is like abducted by mermaids.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah. And the Lamar Abrams story is very Lamar Abrams-ish. It's like a guy playing video games and just like kind of calls the wrong person on the telephone, which I thought was really funny. But probably my favorite in here is there's the Angie Wang story, which is just great just because her
so
art
beautiful.
Is fantastic. Gosh. Yeah, it's so beautiful. She did the back cover as well. It just kind of has to be seen.
Oh,
it's a very dreamy kind of story. And another standout I thought was the Box Brown story, which was just about a wrestler who was supposed to lose a match and decided he was going to win.
Yeah.
And
I really like the Luke Pearson one. Obviously, you know, I'm a huge Luke Pearson fan. I thought that one had the best kind of story and the most emotion behind it. Another one I really liked was obviously Lamar Abrams one because we're huge fans, but it's so like funny.
It's so funny.
Cute.
Yeah. He's he's a hilarious, a funny guy.
And actually the other one I really liked was the, Master Plast by James Harvey. But it's about this guy who's like obsessed with his looks, and he goes to this place like this surgeon who can change your face, but it's like kind of a random process. You just keep changing your face like a
so you might
amount.
Be better or worse than the last time you change your face.
So he gets like really deformed and then really like funny looking like, and then you know finally he has to keep doing it over and over and paying him more money until he gets it right, and then he meets a girl, but he starts seeing flaws in her. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's like how your life changes if you're super beautiful, and really cool.
So you can kind of see the themes that run through these. It's like personal stories on one side of things, but then they all have these kind of weird elements to them that are almost like supernatural or science fiction-y.
Yeah, and there's also like a several of them that were kind of just pushing the boundary of taste and like sexuality and just some like weirdly off color things.
You mean the True Chubbo comic about the Twizzlers?
Oh man, I just remembered, I'd flipping through this, I think my favorite thing was Anonymous Mask.
Oh yeah, the guy just puts on a mask.
Yeah this guy like awesome. Puts on a mask and starts filming himself, like he's like, I could do crazy stuff with this mask.
He definitely
and
does crazy
gets,
stuff.
Like crazier, and he's like, first he's like doing like pranks and stuff, but then he starts doing like really terrible things.
And the Katie Skelly thing, I thought that was good. That was almost like a Junko Mizuno inspired kind of thing about like I don't know, it's kind of like about like devil worship and like these two girls that are in a cult and stuff. I thought
that was
awesome.
One
was
really good too.
Yeah, basically the whole anthology is great.
Yeah,
definitely,
and then there's like
out.
Several articles in the middle about Garo and like other just comics and stuff.
And then
in
a preview of a Garo like book that's coming out.
Yeah, from the original Garo line that's coming out in English soon.
Yeah, so and the the one article in the middle is pretty in depth. You know, it's like a lot of text. Yeah. So. I like how that's how I review an article. It had a lot of words in it, you guys.
So there are fewer pictures than I expected.
So this is done in the traditional style. It's like big and like kind of floppy, like newsprint paper. And it's only $15.
Yeah, and it reads it reads right to left, which is great for the comics. Sometimes for the articles, it's a little weird.
For the articles, it's terrible. It's like not even weird. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's like trying to figure out where the paragraphs go. And
oh, does
like
it read?
It's weird. It's really strange.
It's not strange. It's
I think you have
idea.
To read it in a mirror. I'm confused. but overall, it's all well written. It's a really interesting book. And anthologies can be a really uneven sometimes. And I feel like almost everything in this was cool. In its own way, at
least. It's super interesting, even if it wasn't something you liked. It's like, wow, interesting.
So, Secret Prison 7, for me, the best book of the week. But
maybe not. I don't know.
But I think Nick's probably going to like this one the best. So, up next, we've got Uncanny Avengers number 1.
Yep.
By Rick Remender and John Cassaday.
Yeah.
This
famous
is
from Uncanny X-Force and Astonishing X-Men together at last.
Indeed. And of course,
Planetary.
And Rick Remender did Fear Agent and all kinds of stuff. So, I feel like this is the big one.
This is the
big Marvel book.
This is
the big Marvel book, and thankfully, I mean, at least from my point of view, they knocked it out of the park.
All right, so this is basically the direct follow up to Avengers versus X-Men. Like, if you guys haven't read issue 12, several major things happen, and a very important character dies.
Well, if you haven't read it, just stop listening.
We're just going to talk about it.
Wait, we got anything else to review on this episode?
We do. There's a book called Valentine. Let's just do Valentine first.
All right.
And
rewind.
And we'll do
Valentine.
We'll do a spoiler-filled review.
Spoiler-tastic.
All right. Well, Jared, since you were already talking, I'm going to let you talk about Valentine.
All right. So Valentine is written by Alex DeCampi with art by Christine Larson. And I believe that this is one of the first comics that was almost designed to be viewed as a digital comic at first. And so I read the beginning of this on my friend's phone, actually, and it was awesome. It was like show a scene and then like the text, you would tap it to go to the next page, but instead of showing a new panel, the word balloon or the caption would fade into the panel, and it just really showed what you could do with this new format for it. But this is the book adaptation in print of that format.
Digital comics, kids. It's the wave of the future.
Yep.
Some of it doesn't really translate very well to the
right
book, because there's like panels
kind of like sizing
continue on
off.
Next pages.
Yeah. And some of it seems like, you know, they really blew up a panel or vice versa. So the art is either very tight or very loose, depending on what it was. But Nick and I were both reading this today, and he read it first. He's like, this just gets weirder and weirder. And I agree. It starts off in 1812 during Napoleon leading the French army into invading Russia. There is two French soldiers who are lost in a snowstorm being hunted down by Cossacks. And they run into a French general who gives them a strange little thing and says, you must get this back to the general in France. Yeah. That's your mission. You have to do it no matter what. And does he give them a sword? Is that what it's?
Yeah. He gives them a sword,
A sword as well. And then, of course, they get attacked and strange things happen and
vampires show up.
Vampires, and the sword is magic, and it gets weirder and more fantastic and more horrific at the same time.
Demons and werewolves. Basically, it's like this. There's all these people escaped from, or I don't know how they escaped, but they're trapped in our world, but they're all from this fantasy world. From two different worlds. One is like where all the werewolves and demons and vampires are, and the other one's where all like the fairies and dragons and elves are.
Yeah, it seems like there's like a good guy world and a bad guy world. Yeah.
Good fantasy
Although
and bad fantasy.
That line gets kind of blurred as it goes along, and you're not sure if the good guy world is actually good. It's kind of like a really weird place.
But
and
yeah,
there's a really crazy twist.
Near the end. Yeah, but like, so very soon, Roland of the Song of Roland shows up as like one of these eternal, magical warriors who comes to help these guys on their quest to return the sword. And
Nimue or whatever. She was like the lady in the lake.
So it's playing with a lot of different themes from mythology, mainly Western European ones, but a lot of them mixed in, but with a modern twist and all kinds of. It's basically, this is set up in chapters, which I imagine is how they published it online. And each chapter seems to jump in an even more weird, fantastic direction. As it goes on.
So, Jared, when you were reading this online, would a chapter just, you would like basically scroll through a whole chapter, or like, because this book is weird. Like,
it was all tapping, so it would just be panel at a time. That's why this is a really different format, because there's 2 to 4 panels on
a
page.
I feel like it would scroll across like a really big, because there's like a couple panels that are like several pages long.
And it would do some zooms on stuff, so you like tap, like it opens up on the snowy battlefield, and you tap it, and then it zooms in close up onto like the fallen soldiers and stuff. So it was really well done for
because the book is it reads in a strange way. Like the pacing can be really strange. Like you can get to a page and you're on a single page. page for, you know, a minute or whatever, but then you'll go through like 20 pages in like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And it kind of threw me off a little bit. Like, I like the story, but there was something about it, and I didn't know that this was initially a digital comic.
Yeah, so I think that's what it was.
That actually explains a lot.
It definitely felt really off, and then I wasn't sure if I liked it, but then, like, there's a crazy twist near the end, like the last third of the book, and that part is great, and there's, like, it's really funny, too.
I liked it. I don't know if I can justify the $25 price on it.
Whoa. It's pretty expensive.
Yeah, it's a digest size book. It's in full color. It's very nicely printed, but so much of it reads so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, you can probably read this whole book in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And for
it'll take a little longer than that. There's a lot going on, but yeah, it is quick.
But yeah, so for $25, it's a bit much, but it's still a good book.
It's pretty rad.
Yeah. And it's volume one, so I'll be interested to see where it goes.
Actually, my one problem with this is like it gets to the end of it and you're like, what? That's the end of this book.
So, I bet there's more online already.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. But Valentine, it's an interesting book, and I guess it seems like an interesting experiment.
Yep.
That maybe didn't work out perfectly, but it's still pretty cool.
It's very good.
All right, so back to Uncanny Avengers.
All right. Spoiler filled review.
Yeah. So if you haven't read the end of Avengers versus X-Men, because it's impossible to talk about this.
If you haven't read Uncanny Avengers, don't listen to this part.
Oh, so we're gonna just go for
Let's go for
it. No. Let's do first the spoilers for Avengers versus X-Men. Like, just do the setup.
Out. Here's our 7-tiered review.
Going all out.
No, I mean you don't. We're trying not to spoil everything for people read these things yet. But we're assuming you've read Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah, let's everything.
Let's just assume that people have read Avengers versus X-Men. All right, go for it, Nick. Let's see.
All
what
right,
we're gonna do.
So
we won't stop you
at the end of Avengers versus X-Men. Cyclops killed Professor X.
Wait, I haven't read on.
Ruined.
Turned into Dark Phoenix, and then was taken down, and the Phoenix was split apart, and bringing back the mutants, but in new bodies. So, like, basically, random people just around the mutant powers. And the beginning of this starts with Wolverine giving a eulogy at Professor X's funeral.
Professor X died.
Such a great eulogy.
And Cyclops is in jail.
Yeah, and it's like it cuts back and forth between that and Havoc visiting Cyclops in jail,
basically just to harass him.
Yeah. Cyclops just Havoc just goes to jail and be like, dude, what the hell? Like, he's like, you're an idiot. And then, like, you know, they just kind of talk about it back and forth, and then Captain America's like,
well, we don't need to go through page by page.
No, but then
Nick
like
wants
no
to.
No, but this is just the setup. And then Captain America shows up and he's like, hey, I'm starting an Avengers team with mutants. Lead it?
And he wants Havoc to lead the team.
Right.
Yeah, not Cyclops.
Yeah, but
surprisingly.
The first issue is, you know, it has a little bit of that first issue problem where there's a lot of like team building and
setup,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the action in this is so great.
Well, that's the thing. It's got that stuff, but I think it's well balanced with the action. Like, basically, right when Captain America shows up and he asks Havoc to join the team, Havoc's like, I don't know. And then, you know, they get attacked. And
fight
so,
immediately. Yeah.
And they show how immediately they all work well together. Like, Captain America's like, you know, Havoc has like a sonic thing that he does or whatever, right?
Yeah. He's like, shoot me.
Yeah, he's like, shoot me. So he like shoots it against his shield and
flies
up there.
Oh, so cool.
And it's all John Cassaday, who I don't usually think of as a guy that draws really dynamic action scenes.
Yeah.
But in this, like, I feel like he does a really good job with it. His art's a little bit different in this book than his art in the past. It's still very detailed, but it feels less stiff. Like, sometimes his stuff is very, like, almost vague looking.
Right.
Yeah. It's got almost, like, an airbrush look to it, and I feel like this has a little bit less of that.
I think, and there's, like, a scene with Rogue and the Scarlet Witch together. There's a lot of, like, emotional fallout from Avengers vs. X-Men. Like, a lot of the people who should confront each other have had problems with each other talking. But, like Kevin said, mixed with a lot of action. But for me, I think the best thing about this, maybe not the best thing, is it's setting up a lot of crazy stuff and obviously a lot of stuff.
It's like Rogue and Scarlet Witch are like talking, and Rogue's like, hey, I want you to know that this is still all your fault.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, we got to fight these guys.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So it does that very well.
Some of the craziest villains I've ever seen show up.
Yeah.
There's like a giant turtle dude. There's like some kind of rabbit woman. A guy turns into insects. It's really crazy. And then the end just kind of...
So there's like a framework at the beginning where you don't really know what's going on. And then you see at the end what has been happening and you're like, okay.
Yeah. And I don't want to say spoil.
Because I was like, this is insane.
Yeah. If you're, you know, can't find your remote or whatever, turn this off. Like, the end page of this is one of the craziest things I've seen in like a mainstream comic.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought that was like the worst Cassaday drawing in the whole book. Like, I don't like his look for that page, if you know what I mean.
A little bit.
Just for me, I didn't like it. But what happens on that page is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely amazing. And I really enjoyed this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I've heard a lot of people, you know, I don't like to be the sort of the guy that's like, go Marvel or whatever.
No.
But people seem to be not very interested in Marvel now because they think it's going to be like, they think they're, that it's going to be like the DC thing where they just kind of do away with a lot of stuff and, yeah, and they feel like there's kind of no point in reading it. But this is basically like
building on everything. Yeah.
It's like a marketing ploy by Marvel, sure, to get people in, and you know, which might be off-putting in its own sense, yeah, but you know, this is a book by Rick Remender and John Cassaday. Like, yeah, those, right, guys make good comics, and yeah, I feel like this is a good comic. Yes. I'll be curious to see some of the other stuff coming up, but as far as it goes so far, this is like, this issue at least is a pretty good start to Marvel now.
Yeah, and it, yep, feels very like superhero-y, which is something that maybe hasn't been in the Avengers for a while. I feel like Bendis's Avengers have been a little more like street team, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like Luke Cage. And
well, you're thinking of the Street Avengers, our Avengers team from our Marvel role-playing game.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but I think that's true. And this is not as talking headish as maybe some of the Bendis stuff, yeah, has been. And yeah, I don't know, it's just cool, you know. Like one thing that Remender did with Uncanny X-Force was kind of just made an unironic epic superhero comic.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you can see him moving in that direction with this.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Well, that's all the comics this week. Well, that's, ooh, not true, actually.
Yeah.
This was like the biggest shipment of comics I've ever,
insane,
seen. There were tons, yeah, of stuff, like stuff we didn't even touch on. There's like this awesome Pippi Longstocking book that came out from Drawn and Quarterly, yeah, and like these little Moomin collections that they put out too for their, they have a new kids line. And
new Theo Ellsworth book. There's so many, the new Chris, so many graphic novels. Oh, new Chris Ware.
The new Chris Ware book came
building
out.
Building stories.
By the way, the new Theo Ellsworth book is great. It's just like almost impossible to talk about.
Yeah, we were going to talk about it. And me and Kevin read it, and we're like, what do we say about this? Like,
yeah,
I have no,
yeah,
idea.
But just know it's insane and cool. And yeah, did you guys read anything else this week that kind of was awesome?
Oh, man. Yeah. I can't remember.
I haven't read much.
I was just like hitting you guys, yeah, with that.
I read like the new issue of The Creep. Still good.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there was just like a ton of awesome,
yeah,
stuff.
So
I've just been reading that Marvel book though and playing video games.
There you go.
That sounds great.
That's what we do. All right, cool. Well, that's it for this episode. Sorry if we were being crazy tonight, but whatever. We'll be back next week being crazy again. All right, see you later.